Which Jedi always got his brother's hand-me-downs? Obi-Wan Kenobi.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Your show was better when you had medical questions. Hey!
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve! It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who gives me street cred with the wacko alternative medicine jack-offs. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you've got a question, you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347.
Poohhead.
Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at drscottwm. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. Please don't forget about stuff.drsteve.com. It's what makes the world go round around here. Stuff.drsteve.com. You can click straight through and go to Amazon. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Or you can scroll down and see all of the lovely things that we've talked about on this show. And the Flatus Flute will be on there as soon as Son of Chris gets me the embed code. But until then, you can go to flatusflute.com. I have nothing to do with that. I just think it's hilarious. And then Dr. Scott's website, it's simply herbals.net, simply herbals.net. And then I guess that's it. Yeah, we have Tweaked Audio. Yep. Tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID for 33% off the best earbuds for the price. All right, very good. All right, sir, are you ever – oh, you did change the camera. So we're trying to do this live stream, and I'm kind of – Matt Kleinschmidt from the Laugh Button has been saying you need to do it. And Carl from Who Are These Podcasts has been saying you have to do it. Vinny from The Creep Off have been saying it. So all people certainly I respect in this business all saying you need to do it. Eric Zane. So we're going to try it.
Let's do it.
And we'll see. Yeah. So it's kind of fun. You know, I've got three 4K cameras in here. I have no idea how it looks out there. Trying to use a little OBS to broadcast. That was Vinnie Paolino's idea, an excellent comedian, by the way. And there you go. So here we are. You got anything at simplyherbals.net these days? I ask you that every time. It's like, oh, boy.
Well, you know, nothing new, nothing new.
All right. So you have a couple of stories. I have a couple of stories. Then we're going to take blind phone calls because I do not have I did not do any show prep because I am still getting killed at work.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I've got this article from The Lancet. I don't even remember what it is, so I'm just going to plug the – that's great. That gives everybody a lot of confidence. I care about you to the point. Okay, so I thought this was very interesting. I've been preaching on this show since day one of this stupid pandemic that therapeutics going to be where it's at,
right?
In the end. Yep. Vaccines, yes, powerful tool. But the thing that will let us go back to normal, particularly if this coronavirus does what all the other coronaviruses have done and become endemic, is we need therapeutics. Because that keeps people out of the hospital. If we could keep people out of the hospital with therapeutics, then they don't you know, end up on the ventilator and they don't die. We don't overwhelm the system and people don't die.
Right.
That's the way to go.
Right.
So vaccines will prevent that, but we've already found they're not perfect. Obviously, they're not perfect. None of the therapeutics are perfect. We need every tool at our disposal, but having a pill that we can take as an outpatient where you get COVID-19 and then you go to your doctor and they diagnose you, you get a prescription. Nobody's freaking out because the pill works so well, keeps people out of the hospital. That's awesome. So molnupiravir, I talked about favipiravir, gosh, I don't know, 18 months ago. And I really thought that it was going to come out not this last June, but the June before. But it didn't. We were all focused 100% of our energy on vaccines at that time. And, when we go back and look at this, I just wonder if therapeutics were kind of pushed to the side. I know there were a lot of clinical trials going on, but it just didn't seem to be that the push for therapeutics that there was for the push for vaccine. But vaccine's very important. Don't get me wrong. So,
right.
So favipiravir didn't come out, but its first cousin, they're kissing cousins, you know, God knows what they do, you know, at family reunions, but was molnupiravir. And molnupiravir is probably going to get FDA approval pretty quickly. It's not the panacea we were hoping for, but in the study that they did, it reduced hospitalization by 50%. In other words,
wow.
In the group that didn't get it, 14% went to the hospital. In the group that did get it, 7% went. And in the group that didn't get it, several people died. And I can't remember the exact number. I'll pull that article up in a minute if we need to. But in the molnupiravir group, zero people died. Now, it was not a big enough sample size to prove that it 100% prevents mortality, but it is a very interesting, and it was statistically significant, if I remember correctly, from the study. Now, the study, yes, it was done by Merck, and therefore there are people who find it suspect.
Okay.
I get that. The thing about it is that to apply for FDA approval, you got to do the damn study yourself. You have to. You can't rely on someone else's study to do your FDA approval. So there will be more studies and over more time, and we will get some idea of how awesome or, you know, less so than this stuff is. It seems to be very well tolerated right now.
Good, good.
And, okay, so that's number one. Number two, because I said on this show we're not going to talk about COVID-19 anymore unless I've got some real news.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is a study, and I wish I had a, you know, drop on this thing. Give them this, but, well, that doesn't count. Wait.
No, give yourself a bill!
But I'm going to give them at the same time, I'll give them one of these. And the reason for that is that they finally did a study on remdesivir on people before they go to the hospital. We've been so focused on the critically ill, which we should. No question about that. We need to try to make them better and get them to survive. Once they get to that position. But they finally did a study on people before they went to the hospital, and they showed, around a 50 to 60%. If you look up that one, it's an early remdesivir study.
Okay.
They showed a decrease in hospitalization there as well. So we have now, that hasn't hit FDA approval yet, but that should be easy to get, to just change the indication.
Okay.
Instead of for the critically ill hospitalized, they're going to change the indication and also include people who are not yet in the hospital. So when this is done, we will have three that are proven to work, which is molnupiravir, the monoclonal antibody, and remdesivir. Now, you'll notice two of those, well, all three of these are new, and people, you know, they can sell them for a lot of money. Yeah. People will say, well, what about ivermectin, which you can just buy off of the shelf? The multi-center, double-blind, placebo-controlled study for that is still pending.
Okay.
And I have not seen the data yet. We've got a lot of small study data. Some of it's good, some of it not so good, but still worthy of investigation. And the last time I checked on on clinicaltrials.org, there were still about 70 studies looking at ivermectin. So people are looking at it. I don't want anybody to think that they're just pushing that to the side. And if it works better than these things, hell yeah, we'll write the hell out of it. And yep. I'm going to give you
yep.
one.
Yep.
Write the F now, and this is what I'm leading up to, that is something off the shelf that looks pretty damn good.
Oh, cool.
And this is from eClinical Medicine, and this is an online first thing. It was published September 9th, and it's the effects of adding L-arginine orally to standard therapy in patients with COVID-19, a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, parallel group trial.
Give yourself a bill!
That's the right kind of trial. Now, this is results of the first interim analysis. So what they did was L-arginine is just an amino acid. You can buy it at GNC.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Any pharmacy.
And it's, remember, we've talked about trying to prevent herpes recurrences using lysine because the herpes coat is polyarginine. And lysine and arginine kind of look similar to these enzymes. And so when you overwhelm the body with lysine, the hypothesis is that the virus will have a harder time to build itself if there's more lysine than there is arginine around. Well, anyway, so we may find if people do this that they get a herpes outbreak. Who cares if you don't die?
Right.
I don't think so. I'm not saying that, but it would, you know, we don't know.
We know what you mean, though.
You never know with these things.
No.
So it says endothelium, that's, you know, the tissues. The very small tissues on the inside that line things like blood vessels and stuff like
right.
that. Primary target of severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, a.k.a. we call it COVID-19, but the virus is actually called SARS-CoV-2 or SARS-CoV-2, whatever you want to call it. But the syndrome that it causes is COVID-19. And L-arginine has been shown to improve endothelial dysfunction. Okay, well, that makes sense. However, the effects of L-arginine have never been evaluated in coronavirus disease. So they did, as I said, a parallel group, double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. People who listen to this show all the time know those are the magic words. Conducted on patients hospitalized. Now, this is one for people with severe COVID-19. Again, maybe they'll do a study on people who are not so severe, but the endothelial damage is the thing that really makes people severely ill. That's part of it anyway. Patients received 1.66 grams of L-arginine twice a day or placebo administered orally. So these had to be people that either had a nasogastric tube, in other words, a feeding tube, and they were on the vent, or they were not yet on the vent because they could take pills. And then the primary endpoint was reduction in respiratory support assessed at 10 and 20 days after randomizations. Secondary outcomes were length of hospital stay, time to normalization of their white blood count, and time to obtain a negative PCR test. So remember, we've talked about these studies. You have to have a primary endpoint. You can have secondary endpoints, but the primary one is the one that you're looking at. So, for example, when they were studying sildenafil, which is the active ingredient in Viagra, the primary endpoint was reduction in hypertension.
Right.
But they had this magical secondary endpoint, which
an
was
incredible
yes,
side effect.
That came up later. They had to add it to their study, and then they finally had to do a primary study on erectile dysfunction that said, hey, we're going to consider low blood pressure a side effect now.
Okay.
And the primary effect is the meaty, delightful, tasty erections
yes,
that you get.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Sorry. All right. So let's just look at the results. So no treatment emergent serious events were attributable to L-arginine. That makes sense because it's just an amino acid. At 10-day evaluation, 71.1% of patients in the L-arginine arm and 44% in the placebo arm had the respiratory support reduced. So in other words, and this was statistically significant with a P of less than 0.01. So the odds that this would be random would be 1 in 1,000. You know, it just happened by random chance.
Okay.
A significant difference was not detected at 20 days, however. So there may have been a difference. I've got to look at the data, but it wasn't significant at 20 days. So that's for people who stayed in the hospital that long. They were sick enough. You get somebody that's going to be in there 50, 60 days, the L-arginine probably going to help them very much. But here we go. Strikingly, patients treated with L-arginine exhibited a significantly reduced in-hospital stay versus placebo, with a median of 46 days in the placebo group versus 25 days in the L-arginine group. These findings were confirmed after adjusting for co-founders, including age. See, I love these guys. They're doing all the right things. If you had more elderly people in one group than the other, that might skew your data. So you've got to normalize those things. You've got to account for that. Duration of symptoms, comorbidities, in other words, other diseases like emphysema, heart disease, that stuff. D-dimer, it's a blood test we do that is positive when you have a blood clot in your body, but also positive other times as well as antiviral and anticoagulant treatments. The other secondary outcomes were not significantly different between groups. So very freaking interesting.
That's pretty cool.
So in this interim analysis, so when you're doing a double-blind placebo-controlled study, you have to have someone who's paying attention to the data to make sure if you're killing someone,
yeah,
that you stop the study.
Yep.
But also, if it becomes unethical for you to continue because they're doing so well in the treatment side, they'll stop the study.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Can fast-track it, kind of.
Yep. And that's what happened with the original remdesivir. It became unethical for them to continue with the double-blind placebo-controlled trial, which is why they never got enough people to do mortality data in a placebo in a placebo environment.
Okay.
Because, you know, they were showing that people were getting better,
right,
and it was statistically significant to the point where now it was unethical, but they couldn't continue the trial long enough to get enough people to show that the decrease in mortality was statistically significant. There was one. They just couldn't prove it.
Okay. That's cool.
All right. So L-arginine. So, you know, we're always talking about off-the-shelf things like hydroxychloroquine, zinc, which zinc does reduce colds. It was on my boards today.
Oh, wow.
I took boards today, and it was a guy who came in with cold symptoms.
Okay.
Common cold, clear, runny nose, dry cough, no fever, and nasal congestion, and he wanted to know what would reduce the what was the most likely thing he could take to reduce the duration of symptoms, because he had to give a big presentation in 3 days. That's and the answer was zinc gluconate.
Wow.
Oral zinc gluconate, because it's the only thing that shows, there's been some clinical trials that show it can decrease the duration by about a third. So if it would have been, you know, 10 days, it would be 7 days instead.
Okay.
Or if it's going to be 6 days, it would be four. So, you know, it could be significant.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the only thing that we've ever showed that did anything with common cold. Interestingly, common colds, many of them are caused by coronaviruses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have predicted a long time ago, and it's not just me, but that this coronavirus, once our generation is dead and gone, and this my kids, mm-hmm, and people younger than them grow up, they'll get hit with this again. It'll just be a cold for them,
right?
And then their kids, it'll just be a cold for them, and then this will be an endemic virus. This will be the sixth circulating coronavirus until the next novel one comes out. So death to all viruses. I still advocate a Manhattan Project moonshot style effort to destroy human pathologic viruses. I haven't had a single person give me a reason not to do that.
Right.
There are some beneficial viruses out there probably, but those aren't the ones I'm talking about. I'm talking about Ebola, measles, chicken effing pox, which is, you know, more of a lifestyle thing. Coronaviruses, big time, those kinds of things, you know, pathologic viruses. We already killed smallpox. No one's mourning the extinction of smallpox in this world. Now, why was it so easy to do that one and harder to do these other ones? Because we all know that there are asymptomatic carriers of, SARS-CoV-2. There are no asymptomatic carriers of smallpox. That's the great thing about it. So when you have a case, you can see them. You call whoever the World Smallpox Elimination Council, and they come and vaccinate everyone around them. So the two things that smallpox had in its favor for marking it for extinction was, number one, it was a shitty disease. It killed a lot of people, so we were paying attention to it. Number two, asymptomatic carriers. And number three, the vaccine worked really fast.
Right.
So you could vaccinate people around and just build a wall of immunity around that person. And so, if 70% of the time they would survive, nobody else would get it. And then you just stopped it right there. So Ebola and Marburg and those seem to have, as far as we know, no asymptomatic carriers.
Right.
And they kill the hell out of people.
Uh-huh.
So we should be paying attention to that.
Yeah, really quickly.
Now, if we can come up with a vaccine, that's where these mRNA vaccines were first, developed, were for things like Ebola. Didn't work so good in that, but they're still working on it. So if they can get a rapid vaccine that works to prevent it, we can build moats around people. Then the next thing we got to do is figure out where in the hell Ebola comes from. They still don't know. Is it bats? Is it, somehow from the water? Snakes? Yeah. Who the shit knows? Yeah. But once we figure it out, we're going to get them too,
That's
just vaccinate them. We don't see rabid foxes so much anymore because they'll throw food out that has rabies vaccine in it. And, I remember back when rabies was, a stray dog in your neighborhood was considered a monster.
Yeah.
And I have friends from India and places where they don't vaccinate, and they feel the same way.
Wow.
It's not just India. There are other countries, but countries with large rural populations where they're not vaccinating against rabies, then a stray dog. I mean, you always teach all your kids, don't ever go near them.
Right.
And then if you see the commercials that they
had. Foaming at the mouth.
Oh, my God. When I was a kid, I had nightmares about this rabies commercial that they had with this guy walking down the stairs. And then they go, pow, 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 the lights would flash and then he'd start foaming at the. And it was black and white. It looked like later on. I realized what it was is that sort of weird gray black and white that George Romero used in Night of the Living Dead, how creepy it was, particularly at the beginning when they're in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. That's what it looked like.
Okay.
Or if you want to go back and see Mickey Spillane movie from the 50s called Kiss Me Deadly. It looked like that. It was just terrifying to a 4-year-old kid.
Oh gosh, yeah.
In 1959. And again, had a friend of mine in grade school, kindergarten, who died from measles. That was pretty effing creepy. And then the vaccine came out for measles, and we all jumped on it, particularly at my school.
Yep.
We had a friend who died from it. So anyway, fan of those kind of vaccines.
Shoot, Jim.
For people who say, oh, he's a vaccine. She shills the vaccine. I'm not a fan of the varicella vaccine.
Yeah.
Period. I think it's a dumb idea, and I don't see the value in it. And I've talked about it on this show before. I guess, I could give it 2 seconds just to have some credibility.
Sure.
But, unlike measles, chickenpox very rarely has severe side effects. I'm not going to say it never does, but my concern is they're vaccinating kids when they're young, and then they're not giving them boosters, and we don't know if...
Whoa!
What in the shit was that?
What the hell was that?
Okay. And we still... I could edit that out, but it'll ruin everything, so I'm just leaving it in.
Yeah.
So we don't know that immunity lasts through adulthood. And if you get chickenpox when you're a kid, it's no big deal, sort of like COVID-19. If you get chickenpox when you're an adult.
Well, it sucks when you get it as a kid.
Yeah. Well, it does. But you know,
long-term effect,
I don't remember it.
I do.
I remember having it, but it's not like I remember laying around suffering. You know, I just don't remember that. I had it at Christmas. I remember I couldn't come down and all that kind of stuff. But I did get a Mr. Machine. Go look that one up.
I had it on the bottom of my feet.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to walk on my knees.
Oh, God.
It was terrible. Oh, my God.
Well, anyway, that was just from your parents hanging you upside down, slapping you on the
probably so on the
on
head.
The soles,
yes,
just to teach you a lesson. And then they told you, "Oh, it's chicken pox. You have chicken pox."
Now that may be right. I'll probably have a dream of that tonight. Thank you, Dr. Steve. I love it.
But so when you get chicken pox as an adult, it sucks, and if you're a pregnant adult, it sucks for you and for the baby. So I am concerned about that. I would like to see some data that shows that we're not seeing adult chicken pox, and that'll be over the next 10 years is when we'll really start seeing it, if we're going to see it at all. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all right. Very good. You checking out the chat room?
Yeah, we got a bunch of
any questions in there
today?
Yeah, we'll just keep an eye out, and if you do, just say something.
Sure.
We probably should take some. Did you have a news story?
Yeah, I actually
had
a good one. Yeah,
you had a penis one or something.
No. I thought it was a penis when I first looked at it. No, but it's crazy.
You're supposed to bring penis.
I look for penis ones, but there were no good penis ones.
Oh, okay. You said that last week about vagina ones, and then I found like 20 of them. Penis in the news.
Hey, are you going to let me do my story?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's actually a good story.
Okay.
A man was having chest pain. Then the doctors found a 4-inch piece of cement in his heart.
What?
Exactly. So after 2 days of chest pain and shortness of breath, a man went to the ER. When they started doing some studies on him, they found a 4-inch piece of cement piercing his heart and right lung. According to the, it was in the New England Journal of Medicine. This thing looks
how
like.
How the hell did this happen?
Dr. Steve, this thing looks like a dam.
I don't need to see it. I trust you.
It looks like, when I first looked at it, I thought it was a tapeworm.
Really?
Yeah, it's 4 inches long, kind of thin and long.
Yeah,
and,
looks like Oumuamua, the elongated asteroid that came through the solar system. You know what I'm talking about?
Nerd alert.
How do you not know
about
that?
Nerd alert. No, it looks like
it was an alien spacecraft.
It looks like those bones that people run through their nose, kind of.
Yeah, okay. Sharp on both ends.
Gotcha. On both ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, interestingly, the cement had leaked into this guy's bloodstream.
The cement. Anybody who's not from around here is already hee-hawing.
Cement.
Is that cement, Paul, Uncle Jed?
A cement pollen.
Okay, so the cement, how'd it get
the
there?
The cement had leaked into this guy's vascular system.
How?
Following a kyphoplasty. Shocking.
What?
And they said this is
okay,
not
tell
the
them
first.
What a kyphoplasty is, because nobody knows what the fuck.
Yeah, so a kyphoplasty a lot of times will be used when people have a compression fracture in their vertebra in their spine.
Yeah.
So
the spine is like a bunch of balsa wood blocks, and sometimes one of them will crush.
Yep.
Just like if you put enough weight on a bunch of balsa wood blocks, one of them may crush.
And
it hurts like hell.
And typically it's in the middle.
Yeah.
The middle of the thoracic spine, so right in the middle of your back, kind of between your shoulder blades.
Yeah.
That's typically where it happens. And in Dr. Steve, you know, we see it a lot with an osteoporotic, older females and older males who have.
Tell them what osteoporotic means. You've got to quit using all this jargon.
They have.
I talk to all my medical students and residents about not using words that the public don't use.
Sure.
I have to guide Dr. Scott in that way, too.
I need a lot of guidance. Thank you. But our osteoporosis is just a deteriorating bone disease. So the bones are getting soft.
Right.
The bone's getting soft.
Yes.
And what's probably happened in this gentleman is his bones got a little soft. He probably got a little compression fracture. So what the neurosurgeons will do, and maybe some spinal orthopedic surgeons will do, they'll actually go in with a big needle, and they'll go into the actual bone itself, and they'll shoot this cement.
I thought it was just resin, though. Isn't it just epoxy?
Well, it's like a cement. I don't know exactly what it's made of.
It says a pasty compound called PMMA, a type of bone cement. No, you're right. Yep. Okay, well, I'll give you one of these.
Give yourself a bill!
You were more right than me.
Well, once in every 15 years. But it normally works pretty well. The cement is supposed to stay inside the vertebra. It solidifies just like you would a foundation.
It stabilizes.
It stabilizes. It's just like if you're going to put a new block under one corner of your home that's sagging. And that's what they did. But somehow, and evidently, this has happened before. And
how the F did it get in his heart?
My guess is whoever put it in.
That's what we want is maybe the guess of an acupuncturist on how this happened.
Hey, I know.
I'm just kidding.
I know
go
more
ahead.
Than your average
yes, you do.
Monkey.
Yes, you do.
But anyway, it's hard. It's hard to say, but the guess is probably if the bone may have been softer than what they thought, maybe when he injected it, a little bit too much force, maybe it went through the backside of it, and they just couldn't tell. But
it's inside his heart, though?
It literally pierced his heart and lung.
Oh, it pierced it. Okay,
literally
so it was outside of it and then working its way into it.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Oh God, I bet that hurt.
Yeah, there are no images of that, but they showed the removed pierced
So if you go past, so let me describe the procedure, and then I think we can figure out a way that this might have happened, because I know when they taught us how to do lumbar punctures, a lumbar puncture is where you're trying to get fluid from the spinal canal, and you need to go between two vertebrae to do that, right?
Yep.
And so you've got those bony knobs, we call them spinous processes, and they kind of point down, so you have to sort of aim up to get into that. And what they always taught us was if you get pulsatile blood back when you do that, you've actually missed the canal and you've gone into the aorta.
Right.
And to, make excuses really quick.
Call for help.
Yeah. So let's see here. It says spinal compression fractures occur primarily in spinal vertebrae that have been weakened by osteoporosis, just exactly as Dr. Scott said. They typically occur in the thoracic region, so that'd be between the neck and the low back, but can occur in the lumbar spine, which is in the low back. So the goals are to reduce pain from the fracture and stabilize the vertebra, just as Dr. Scott said. So what the neurosurgeons tell me is it's the microscopic movement of these fragments in there that actually causes the pain. And so when the hypothesis is that when they stabilize all that, the pain will get better. So the patient lies face down on the operating table, and the surgeon makes a small half incision over the affected area. And then using X-ray guidance, the surgeon inserts a narrow tube through one part of the vertebrae into the one side of the fractured vertebrae. And then when they do a thing called a balloon kyphoplasty, there's this balloon tamp is inserted through the tube, and they inflate to create an open cavity inside the bone and restore the height to this collapsed vertebrae. Mm. Then the surgeon deflates it, removes the balloon tamp, and then they put this compound called PMMA, which is bone cement, and is injected into the cavity until it's full. And it hardens quickly. I guess it's kind of like dental cement, creating an internal cast of the fractured vertebrae. And then you can do that on the other side as well. So that's on one side of the vertebral body. Now, in other forms of kyphoplasty, the other surgical approaches for creating the cavity can be used, like a net or a ball or something like that. Then they close the incision, and then you stay on the operating table when the cement hardens, and it takes like 5 minutes, and you usually can go home the same day.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. It's pretty
quick.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, so if you could stick a needle all the way through into someone's aorta, I could imagine that you could miss the area where you thought you were.
Yeah.
And inject it into an empty space. And when you do that and you're pulling it back out, you're going to make a long, thin thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So you push it in, and then as you're pulling it out, you get a long, thin sort of tube. And now this cement is just in there, and where's it going to go? It's just going to start moving around. And if it moves forward in that area, it's going to hit the heart and the lungs. So, yeah, that makes sense how that happened.
Yep.
When you first brought it up, I thought it was actually inside the ventricle of the heart. And I was like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't your fault. It was just the way I imagined it. So if you all want to see how this is done, just go to YouTube and Google kyphoplasty, K K-Y-P-H-O-P-L-A-S-T-Y. That's a good one.
Good one, huh?
All right.
Almost as good as the penis one, but...
Well, I got a penis one.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Prostate cancer patient who lost their penis to a flesh-eating bug wins six-figure National Health Service payout. This is for our friends over the seas, overseas. The surgery left this 63-year-old with just an inch and a half of his penis and no muscle in his stomach. Oh, my Lord, this poor guy. It was a cancer patient contracted a flesh-eating infection after routine operation and was left with just an inch and a half left of his penis. And he got a six-figure sum from the National Health Service at Southern University Hospital, NHS Foundation Trust in Essex. By the way, for our British fans or listeners, I do love the Essex accent. Has admitted that a delay in diagnosing potentially deadly necrotizing fasciitis left him with life-changing injuries. So, yeah, necrotizing fasciitis is when a bacteria get in some of these layers under the skin, and they can just move up and down wherever they want to go, and they just eat away, and the skin just sloughs off. And if your penis happens to be in the way, you will end up with an inch and a half of penis.
Yeah.
So Dr. Scott just told me there are no good penis stories. That's not a good penis story. It's a horrible penis story.
It's a horrible penis story.
It's a good one for this show, though. All right. All right. You got anything else?
Nope.
All right. So this is what we're going to do is, wait, penis extensions do not work and should almost never be carried out. Okay, wait a minute. Let's see this one. Okay, penis extensions do not work and should almost never be carried out. Who is saying that? It's in quotes. Surgical and non-surgical procedures to increase the size of men's penises do not work and carry high risks, new research suggests. According to a review published in the journal Sexual Medicine Reporting, not only are the majority of these treatments ineffective, but they could lead to severe complications such as permanent numbness. I don't like that. Penile deformity, well, it depends on how the way it's deformed. Shortening, not good. Erectile dysfunction, not good. It also says most men are unhappy with the results following treatment. So they did a systematic review. Now, remember, a systematic review is where you take a bunch of studies and then you mush all the data together, but you try to get all of it that's in the that's regarding your topic. So it's slightly different than a meta-analysis where you want to get everything. So they included 17 studies assessing a total of 1,192 men, and studies with fewer than 10 cases were eliminated from the review. So non-surgical treatments included extenders, injectables to increase the girth. We've done that story where people were injecting like lip filler around the circumference of their penis to give themselves that sort of ribbed feeling. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Don't do that, no.
And vacuum devices, which are also used to treat erectile dysfunction. They do work for that. Probably don't work to extend the size of your penis unless you're talking about the difference between your flaccid and an erect penis, then that's fine. Surgical interventions, included suspensory ligament incision. Okay, this is one of those things where they go above the penis itself, and there is a ligament that when you have a really raging erection, you know how it points kind of up,
mm-hmm.
or out and up, but
yep.
mostly up. When you there's a ligament, the suspensory ligament that holds it up. So if you cut that, then it will increase the penile length by about an inch, mm-hmm. because it will just kind of come out
right.
of the body, but it will always point down to the ground.
Right.
You'll have to lift it up.
Point the wrong way.
Yep. Yep. Tissue grafting, and then, listen to this one. Penile disassembly. I don't like the sound of that at all. And these treatments cost up to £40,000, which is, I don't know what that is. And what's £40,000 in? Okay. Echo, what's £40,000 in U.S. dollars? She'll tell us.
£40,000 is $54,347 U.S. dollars and 83 cents.
So it used to be around $2.50 per pound, and now it's about, a $1.10, something like that? Yeah, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, so these treatments can cost up to about $54,000. Some are available with the National Health Service, but only for clinical reasons, i.e. to repair bodily trauma rather than cosmetic ones. So let's see. Those seeking penile enlargement are sometimes diagnosed with a psychological condition called penile dysmorphia, i.e. they perceive themselves to have a small penis when it's in fact a normal length. Remember, the normal length is 5.5 inches as measured from the base to the tip of the erect penis. So, you know, it used to say 6 inches, and people, you know, there were a whole lot of people going, well, wait a minute, I must be below average. But no, you're exactly average if you're 5.5 inches. Anyway, so there you go. So a lot of not highly recommended doing penile extensions.
No.
Well, just because it doesn't seem to work very well.
No.
And people are not happy with the results. All right. So one thing that we have is we've got a bunch of voicemails.
Cool.
And I haven't screened any of them.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go with this. So I was thinking that we could just play the damn things and see what happens.
Let's give it a shot.
Motion All right. detected at the front door.
Okay. I got to do something about that. All right. Let's see here. Here we go. Let's try this guy.
Hey, Dr. Steve. Dustin from California.
Hey, Dustin.
I just got my balls snipped yesterday.
Yeah.
Still sitting on the couch. I'm watching your live feed right now.
Oh. Hey, Dustin.
The swelling. I don't mind the swelling. Looks
yep.
pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But they use the laughing gas on me, and I got all tingly.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Your urologist is 1,000 times better than mine.
Yeah, and mine.
Mine took a daisy razor, dry scraped my nuts, stuck a needle in the vas deferens, and said, oh, this is going to feel like I'm shooting it into your testicle, and he wasn't wrong. And then we went on from there. I would have loved to have had some laughing gas, because I do love me some laughing gas. Anyway, and yes, it makes you feel all tingly. And Chanda, who we've had on the show, did a thing where she took protein-enriched plasma and injected it into my scalp to see if she would make my hair grow more, you know, just make it thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And she did laughing gas when she did that, and I felt all tingly, know exactly what he's talking about. But every time she stuck the needle in my scalp, I saw fireworks go off.
Huh.
It was the coolest thing. It was like, oh, fireworks.
That's
so,
cool.
Yeah, I love fireworks. Okay, anyway.
I was cracking jokes, and I don't know if the urologist and them or whatnot, were, they weren't laughing at my jokes. Maybe I just wasn't funny. Or
yeah, that's usually what it is. You think you're hilarious.
You think you are.
But probably not so much. Or they were paying attention to what they were doing, which is probably good.
Something, but anyway, it was quite the experience. And you mentioned when you got yours snipped, that it kind of gave me the confidence to go in there and get it done.
So, all right, man.
I told my wife this better pay off. So, anyways, thanks for the show, and thanks again for helping me get through yesterday and going in there with confidence. Get
hey, I'm glad, man.
Snipperoo.
Good, thanks, good, man. Good. No, hey, good for you. It really isn't that, you know, we make fun of it, but of our experience having it done, because, you know, we can, because it happened to us and we make fun of it. But I never want to do that to the, you know, to the point, or, you know, we're trying to normalize it.
Right.
And we want people to realize it's not that big of a deal, because if two wimpy ex-hippies like we can do these things, then anybody can do
That's
it.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like that picture of me. If you Google or YouTube search Mando Birch, I think it's on our channel, and Dr. Steve, you can see a picture of me when I was 21. And I will pass that driver's license around when I go to my kids' career day at school. And I'll say, listen, if that idiot can go to medical school, anybody in this room can. I don't care how goofy you are. So, but it's the same kind of thing. And, you know, we got through it. It wasn't that big of a deal. We got over it. If I can give Dustin one piece of advice, definitely get the hard catcher's jock strap. That's what it's called, right? I mean, what do you call it? It's a cup.
It is a cup.
Cup, yeah. But it's the thing that the catchers wear.
You have to have a jock strap to hold your cup in place.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You gotta have,
okay.
Got to have both.
Well, mine was integral to the thongy thing.
Hmm.
But anyway, get a cup, and then you can sort of walk around with impunity, because for the next few days, if anything touches the juncal region of your body, it will be an experience that heretofore you have yet to experience.
Yes.
And right now, if the numbing hasn't worn off, you think, hey, I'm good, but it's coming. And but it lasts a couple of days. No big deal. I went to work. I think I took one day off and went to work, wore the cup. I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen peas wrapped in many layers of paper towels or, you know, just a regular towel. Just to, you don't want to give yourself frostbite.
No.
That would be stupid. And then you would really
then
be
sad.
Then
it'd really hurt, yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, congratulations on Dustin. Hey,
good
that's
job,
cool.
dude. Good
All
job.
Right. So, we actually got a call straight from the live stream, so and it was a good one, so maybe we should do this more
cool, man.
Often. All right. Okie doke. This one is looks like it's – I don't know who this is. This looks like it could be Tracy from Louisiana, I think. Let's see.
What's the best way to pick a new physician? By people's personal reference or – going through your insurance company to make sure that that doctor gets paid.
Well, that's an important one. You don't want to find the best doctor in the world and find out you got to pay cash unless you're rich. You know, if you're a celebrity, you don't care. But you want a person that has the best word of mouth. And forget health grades. I go on and goof on my medical school classmates,
right.
health grades all the time, and they do it to us. I mean, everybody does it to each other. And then a lot of the reviews that are negative are people who didn't get their lore tabs that they wanted, and they're the ones that'll go on health grades and give somebody a review.
Yep.
So don't pay any attention to that. I think those websites are completely worthless. Talk to people who, you know, who are around you and say, who do you like? Some of them say, I hate my doctor. Well, don't go to that person unless they hate them for a reason that would make you like them. You know, like I go in there. Well, I can't think of a great scenario, but you can. You can think of a great scenario where somebody would say, I hate that doctor because of X, and that makes you actually want to go see him. So I hate, you know, anyway, like I said, I could think of 100 inappropriate ones and a couple of decent ones, but you know what I mean. So but word of mouth. And then you just check them out. And remember, you can vote with your feet. If you get in there, you don't like them, go somewhere else. Take your business elsewhere. If the front office is crummy to you, yep. go somewhere else. Oh, but, you know, give them a chance to fix it, though. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're crummy to you one time, if they're rude, maybe they're having a bad day, you talk to the office manager, say, hey, they kind of treated me kind of rude out there. And most of the time, the office manager will go, oh, gosh, you know, I'll take care of that. Let's get you back in here, and we'll do better next time. And if they do that, then, heck, you know, go
Pollution
ahead and go back.
At the
okay,
front
how
door.
Can I shut her up when she does that? It's people dropping packages
yeah.
off up front. Anyway, all right. So let me see. Here is Albert from Albuquerque. Let's see. Okay. Well, the first thing he's going to say is something we have some news about. So.
Cool.
Hey, Dr. Steve. It's Albert from Albuquerque.
Hey,
How
Albert.
You doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Great. Hey, listen, I miss Stacy. But I heard your episode today, and you're talking about Patreon, and I'm not sure, but I'm thinking you're talking about prostitution, but I can't be certain.
No.
Gonna be
no, we're going to, we're not going to OnlyFans. We're going to Patreon, and it is just to let Tacy be on the show again. And she can only do it on Saturdays, so we figure we'll do the special edition on Saturdays, and we'll throw those up on Patreon. And it'll be real cheap, not a dollar. It'll be slightly more than that, but we'll do like 3 shows a month, and it will be no ads and nothing but just...
Tacy drinking and talking.
Tacy drinking, yelling at me about stuff, and then we'll just do phone calls. So we're going to try it and see. But yeah, that's what that was about. And no, it's not prostitution. Thank you. That's for other former radio people to do, and not prostitution,
not
by the way. But you know, OnlyFans a whole other thing. That's not what we're doing. And I'm not talking about anybody in particular.
Trying to earn some money on her. Anyway,
okay, fair enough.
Hey,
okay, yes, I may be guilty of that. Yes.
Back to an issue I've had ongoing for a while. I had an extremely elevated testosterone, they thought. So I went to an endocrinologist, did not get a good feel for that person's communication skills, let's put it that way.
Okay.
So I chose to go to a second endocrinologist and get a second opinion. It took me several months to do it because I went to a teaching hospital and it took...
Let me throw one thing out here on this. you don't have to like your specialists. It's like they have to know what they're doing. You have to like your primary care and people that you see frequently. But if you're just going for a consultation, you don't have to like them.
Right.
So I counsel people, listen, you got to like me. You don't have to like this person I'm sending you to. So if that helps any. But anyway, so he went to a different place.
A little while.
Yeah.
But I got the great explanation that I wanted from the person that I talked to, the doctor I talked to yesterday, related to free versus total testosterone and the concerns and the correlation and causation of elevated PSA related to free testosterone, not total. In any event, the long and short of this is it doesn't appear like I probably have any kind of an issue. I probably have a naturally high sex hormone, which is binding the testosterone and resulting in a high test. However, it was a little bit disturbing for me to go through this process and have to get my first, second opinion from a doctor in 60 years.
Yeah, I agree.
And I just figured maybe you should take a minute or two on how we should feel about talking to our medical community and our doctors. Because I know I felt a little awkward in challenging my doctor when I didn't get a good vibe on the first endocrinologist.
I think it's totally fine. Listen, even if the insurance company is paying for it, you're paying for the insurance. This is your body, your life. You get to pick. You have autonomy. The number one principle in modern Western medical ethics is that patients have autonomy. In other words, they have the ability to pick to make their own decisions about their health care. To do that, you have to be fully informed about your health care. That's a whole other thing. But you get to make this decision. So if you go in and for whatever reason you just get a bad vibe, you can just, again, vote with your feet. I usually counsel that to speed things up because of the problem you had was once you went to get the second opinion, it took forever to get one, that to try to get that relationship to work if you can.
Yes.
But and sometimes you can talk to somebody, and it's usually the office managers you want to, the one you want to talk to. And if they just blow you off, if they get all defensive and stuff, fine, then get the hell out of there, you know, and go get a second opinion. But you deserve to be treated with respect. I went to a consultation many years ago when the computer thing was first starting, and the doctor's computer was set up so that he could not do anything without turning his back completely to me.
Wow.
I was looking at his back the whole time, and then he would sort of shout questions at me and then be putting stuff in the computer.
Lovely.
That sucked.
Yeah.
And you know what really sucked about it? It was somebody I knew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I've known this person forever, and I think we either trained together or I trained right under him when he was, you know, something like that. I can't remember. Or we came at the same time. You know, we came to this town at the same time.
Right.
But anyway, so, yeah. So, yeah, you deserve all of those things. You're paying a lot of money. Healthcare in this country costs a lot of money, and you deserve to be treated with respect. If you don't like it, how they're treating you, get the hell out of there. But to summarize, give them a chance to fix it if they can,
yes.
If it's fixable.
Yeah, because you never know when somebody's seen just previous to you as far as clinically.
Shouldn't matter, but we are human beings.
It shouldn't matter, but you just sometimes, it's just a bad day.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking. Sean in the chat room talking about the post vasectomy pain said frozen peas are the key. So, Dr. Scott, okay. Richard says, I had a test today. My teacher said it was a vast difference from my from my other taste. Well, that's pretty funny. hey, that feller's a good one. Oh, boy.
Unbelievable.
All right, you got anything?
Well, Jody was asking about if she had mumps on one side, can she get them on the opposing side?
No, not really.
Shouldn't be able to.
So, really, mumps is one of those viruses. You get it, you really don't get it again. And when you say you got it on one side, what that means is the parotid gland, which is the salivary gland on that side, you know, you had parotiditis, which is one of the side effects of mumps, or one of the effects of mumps, one of the symptoms of mumps, is inflammation of the parotid gland. And when that happens, it could be one side, both sides, or no sides. And you still get the same immunity. It's not a you know, the other parotid gland isn't susceptible to it just because it didn't swell up that last time? That's a good question. Damn good question.
Give yourself
Thank you, Jody.
All right. Give her one of those. Got anything else?
That looks like a
seriously?
I'm scrolling back down through them all.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it was a lot of chatting.
That's okay.
It's a good thing. It's good
Y'all have fun over there.
It's a good thing.
All right. Well, we can't forget Rob Sprance, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes. I'm going to be on Opie's live stream tonight. That will be fun. I haven't talked to him in ages. Anthony Cumia, also have not talked to in ages. And got to get together in South Kakalaki very soon. Jim Norton, Travis Teft, That Gould Girl, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Chowdy 1008, Eric Nagel, The Port Charlotte Horror, The Saratoga Skank, Roland Campos, Sister of Chris, Sam Roberts, She Who Owns Pigs and Snakes. Let me do that one again. Hang on. She Who Owns Pigs and Snakes. Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Gulf, Steve Tucci, the great Rob Bartlett, Vic's Nether Fluids, Carl's Deviated Septum, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, Carl Hamburger, Vinny Paolino, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's Daughter, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand at other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules, podcasts, and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. All right. Thank you, Dr. Scott.
Thank you, buddy.